I'm Paul Irwin, and welcome to the Prose.com podcast, where we discuss everything translation and interpreting related, including how to get new clients, areas of specialization, technical skills, software localization, machine translation, diversification, and more. Prose.com, helping freelance translators and interpreters succeed. Hey everyone, Paul here, episode 61. Today we're going to be talking about working for Interpol and working as an executive assistant for high net worth individuals. So a really fascinating topic, because I think there are lots of opportunities out there for linguists that aren't necessarily obvious at first sight. And Lauren Borden does a great job of highlighting some of those opportunities. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Don't forget to check out training.prose.com. We've got some really great courses and workshops coming up over the course of the next few months. And if you'd like to comment, if you'd like to ask me anything about the podcast, anything about courses, you can contact me via training@prose.com. That's training@prose.com. With a passion, love, and forte for French and Spanish, languages have become Lauren Borden's life, education, career, and now her new business, Your Trilingual Support. One of her main career highlights was working for Interpol London as an in-house translator, and then, after 5 years and ready for a new challenge, she became a bilingual executive assistant working for high net worth individuals in Mayfair. Recently, she has brought all her experience, skill, and passion together to create Your Trilingual Support, which offers language, translation, and executive assistant support to high net worth individuals operating across Europe. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, really looking forward to this conversation. I know you have some very interesting things that we're going to be talking about today. But before we get into that, just tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in this amazing industry, please.
So basically, I've just always had a passion and a love for languages. So I studied French and Spanish at college and university. My degree was translation and interpreting at the University of Salford. Fantastic degree, yep. Fantastic university. I really enjoyed my time there. And then it took me a while, really, to properly find my career break. I went back to France after my degree and spent quite a bit of time working in France. And then,
so what were you? I mean, let's just pause on that part, because I like to understand the journey. So at that point, were there any frustrations? Did you you were just slightly just wasn't a clear path, and how did that feel at that time?
All I knew is that I really loved my languages and I definitely wanted to be involved in languages. But when I was looking into it as a young 16-year-old girl, I remember the feedback was, you can work in tourism or you can be a teacher, or you could be a freelance translator. That was all really I was given as options. And none of that really rocked my world at that age. So I continued with my passion, which was my languages, and found the perfect degree for me, which was translation and interpreting. And then for a while, I was working in Manchester, I'd say probably working in accounts payable for international companies, but I didn't really enjoy that. Didn't rock my world. And then after a while, I went back to France again and I worked in France because I was really enjoying being in France and improving my language skills. And I worked within tourism and that was great for then. And I taught English as well with the British Council in France. And then I came back to Manchester and I found a really interesting job actually that I did enjoy, which was using my languages, and it was within international exports. So I would be looking after the clients in South America and in Spain with their orders, dispatching their goods via sea freight, by road, and dealing with any issues that popped up along the way. So using my Spanish a lot, and I really enjoyed that. But it wasn't my love. However, then out of nowhere came a big break, which was a good friend of mine from university at the time spotted the vacancy for Interpol in the Guardian newspaper. I hadn't seen it myself. She saw the vacancy, thought of me, because she was a linguist as well, but more involved in international business. And I was very much translation and interpreting. I applied for the vacancy. I really didn't think in a million years it would go very far. Because I just thought, well, maybe this is more for private school students, or maybe this is more for people who have a French mom and a Spanish dad. I just didn't think it would go far. Yeah. But I thought nothing ventured, nothing gained. So absolutely. I applied for the job.
I
was invited for an interview at St. James's Park in London, where I had never even been before. So I jumped on the train, went for the interview, and lo and behold, I was offered the job at Interpol, which is also combined with the Serious Organised Crime Agency, as it was known as then. And that was, say, 15 years ago now is when I first started working for Interpol, and I worked there for 5 years as an in-house translator.
Wow.
And it was fantastic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you can about that experience and
how it might differ
to say another experience.
Well, it was just so interesting. Everything that I loved all happening at the right time. So the subject matter was extremely interesting. Everything, international cooperation, law enforcement, criminal law, both my languages, French and Spanish. I was using my languages all day, every day, not only translating, but also in terms of international liaison via email and telephone, liaising with different Interpol offices worldwide in French, English and Spanish. Very small team. And a lovely team as well. And also on call to deal with any urgent matters out of hours. So that was on a regular basis, being available in the evening and the nighttime at the weekend to basically drop everything whenever a call came through that was considered urgent to deal with there. And then make sure you have access to your secure laptop and able to deal with accordingly. Whether it's 4 a.m. in the morning, you wake up and you get the job done.
Wow. And that happened quite a lot then, I imagine.
I was on call one week every month. And it was guaranteed really at one point during that week, you would get called in the middle of the night. And it's tough.
I imagine. Yeah, I mean, I imagine, because I haven't been in that situation, but I imagine it is tough, but also it's quite exciting because there's something live and urgent happening. Yeah, right?
The adrenaline kicks in and you definitely soon wake up.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. And just in terms of the workflow, this is a more general question to do with in-house translation. Obviously, as a freelancer, you get quite a lot of ups and downs, or that's typically what many freelancers have. How does that work in an in-house position, or in your case specifically? Did you just have work all the time, or were there times when it was just much, much busier than others?
No, there was definitely work all the time, but we prioritised well. So you always knew which were the most pressing matters and you prioritised accordingly. But yeah, there was always work coming in. You never had no work. But at the same time, it wasn't a setup where you were snowed under constantly, or it was a kind of panicked environment. But yeah, there was always the constant flow of work.
Brilliant. And what would you say that you learnt most from that job, aside from getting better as a translation, as a translator and as a linguist?
I'd say more on a personal level, if anything, just destiny, I think. Mm-hmm. You really never know what's around the corner, and what's meant for you will happen at the time that is meant for you. Because I would never even knew that that role existed, and I wasn't even looking for that role. And lo and behold, a friend of mine spotted it, thought of me, sent it my way, and I had the guts to go forward and came across well in my interview and had the relevant degree. Studies, they were either looking for somebody who had a master's in translation or somebody who had a degree within the field of translation, a language degree within the field of translation. And I had that language degree specializing in translation. So it just all aligned really well for me that time.
Perfect. And culturally, was it a big change to what you were used to?
I think more, it wasn't the workplace that was a culture shock at all. It was more London, I would say, that was a culture shock for me, because as someone who'd never even visited London before and was very much, came from the north of England, a small town, I wasn't really a city girl and I wasn't a southern girl or a London girl. It was more of a, that I find that more different really, to be honest. But the office itself was an absolute delight to work in. Very friendly people, a lot more grounded than I ever thought it would be. And I think that comes from the presence of ex-police or ex-customs. So it's very much a grounded environment and friendly.
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, what a fantastic experience. Obviously something, you know, quite different, I think, to what most people's experience is. And also interesting that you mentioned, Lauren, that you mentioned, you know, looking out for, you know, in this case, it was your friend who spotted the ad, but you were sort of open to these new challenges and then went for it. And I think what it says to me is it is quite surprising how many opportunities are out there if you are open to look for them and actually do look for them.
Most definitely. I think I'm always somebody who promotes networking, not just because, you know, it's useful and you want to just use people or situations. There are so many different elements in networking that make it positive and just socializing and interacting with people, but also just going with the flow. And when you see an opportunity, never being too scared to put yourself forward for it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what works really well in my situation.
Brilliant.
And obviously so choosing the wrong degree as well. I chose well in terms of my degree.
You chose well for the degree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. So you were there for 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that position, you finished working there. Well, tell us what the next step was for you.
Yeah, just after 5 years, because I'm quite a social person as well, and I'm quite ambitious. And I was in London in this still relatively new city with so much to offer. I could see quite a lot, but I just wanted to change and I wanted a bit more interaction beyond my computer and my dictionary and the small team. And I saw there was lots of opportunity to work as a bilingual or trilingual executive assistant in London. And financially, it was really appealing and lots of opportunities there. And still using my languages. So I started to branch out, and before long I was employed as a bilingual executive assistant in Mayfair for a ultra high net worth Monegasque gentleman in a lovely family office in Mayfair, and that's where I went to next, and that was the start of my bilingual executive assistant journey. And I worked there for 2 years and then stepped up as the office manager during maternity leave of my colleague. And then afterwards I thought, okay, I don't really want to go back to somebody else's assistant. I wanted to be the main assistant and the office manager. So I then moved on from there and worked for a Parisian hedge fund just down the road, still in Mayfair. And then I worked there for a Parisian hedge fund as the executive assistant and office manager for 5 years. So in all, I had several years experience as a bilingual executive assistant.
Brilliant. So tell us a little bit about what that work actually involves on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis, please, Lauren.
Yeah, it was interesting as well, because at the beginning of the podcast, I mentioned how nobody really tells you what your real options are as a linguist. And that would have been fantastic for the careers advisor to be able to say, oh, actually, and this is what I want to share with people as well, there is so much opportunity out there for you if you're a linguist to work as an executive assistant. I mean, it might not be for everybody, but certainly there are lots of opportunities. You can use your languages, and financially it can be really rewarding. And often you can travel quite a lot as well as part of your role. So with my executive experience, very much Mayfair-based, very much for French or Monegasque companies, they recruited me, I think, partly because of my Interpol background, very much trustworthy person. My degree probably came into play because I was a competent translator. By that point, I was qualified and experienced translator. And then the language skills, the fluency. My French is very fluent now after so much time spent living in France, it's very active, not just passive. So yeah. I think that's why I had the good opportunities as well as an executive assistant. So lots of international liaison with their offices in Monaco or their offices in Paris. Events management, so organising overseas events for the teams, so bringing all the teams together, whether it was the London and the Paris team in Paris or the London and the Monegasque team in Monaco. Involvement in the events management side of things. Also translation, especially for the Monegasque company. Because in that role, the director's English was quite limited. Well, it wasn't limited, but he didn't speak fluent English. So he did very much all his business in French. So when we received... I've gone off on a tangent there. The reason why I was involved in translation was because, well, the English architects didn't speak French and the French architects didn't speak English. And it was a real estate family office. So there was lots of translation that I was involved in that company. And beyond that, you're more day-to-day general, personal assistant, executive assistant duties, whether it's organising meetings, diary management, expenses, international travel. It was quite varied, to be honest, and incorporated all of that. But what I really enjoyed is that I could use my languages so much, lots of international liaison, lots of events management for France and Monaco, and translation as well. So I really had...
So just a mixture of everything, really.
Yeah, I used my languages a lot, and it was very high-end as well, because in both instances, both directors were high-net-worth individuals. There was lots of lifestyle management as well that came into play, and family liaison, and that was always really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it probably makes quite a lot of difference, the type of niche that you're in. So you're in that very high net worth hedge fund type niche. That obviously would have had an impact on your work and on the types of activities and on the international events and so on. So I think that probably made it, you know, more interesting than some positions, right?
Yeah, it was very interesting, especially in the Monaco company. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. So 7 years altogether.
Yeah.
Doing that, correct? So what's next? And I guess you're going to start bringing us up to the present day now, right?
Yeah. So now, for quite some time, I've always known that I wanted to set up home in Spain or in France. And then in the end, due to personal reasons, we decided on Spain. And for a while, I was looking for a job in Spain. I could not find anything that was appealing, especially in comparison to my background, the opportunities I'd had in London. And I didn't really want to take a step back in my career. So I was looking and looking, no luck, nothing interesting. And then during the pandemic, I kind of just had an epiphany moment. I think like many of us did, just you realise what you want and what's important to you. And you have a different setup. I was working at home as an executive assistant, whereas normally I was an executive assistant in the office. And I thought, you know, I want to move to Spain so much. I love my career. How do I make this happen? And actually working from home isn't too bad. You know, I'm not missing the social as much as I thought I would do. And I had an epiphany moment and I decided to bring everything together that I had experience in. So my translation and my executive assistant work, bring that together and start my own business and offer all of those services as a freelance. So now I work as a freelance translator and also a virtual trilingual executive assistant. And that's been my setup now for a good 5 months. And here we are. Four weeks into moving to Spain.
And in terms of your business, so you call the shots now. So how does that feel? And how does that work? Are you happy with that setup? Is it working for you financially? How do you feel with your business in its early stages?
Yeah. I mean, at first it was a little bit daunting. I remember because I had the bright idea to make the most of the opportunity of being my own boss and working for myself. And I thought, well, whilst all our belongings are being shipped from the UK to Spain, and I'm my own boss, why don't we go traveling? So we went traveling for
yeah.
4 months. And I think that was a little bit daunting in a way, because I just remember all of my savings going one way, and it was only dying.
Yeah.
And not much money was coming in, and lots of money was being spent. And I remember having a few moments where I freaked out. But I just had faith that everything would be fine, and I trusted what people said, mm-hmm. is that, you know, kind of plant the seeds, and before you know it, it takes a good 6 months to set up your 6 months to set up your business, and then before you know it, everything comes together. And that's exactly what happened. So I enjoyed the traveling, and I was still working as and when I could, as I went along, in terms of how I could be available and what work was coming to me. And now, after 1 month of being back in Europe and being fully available myself to work full time, I'm at full capacity now, and it feels fantastic. I feel in a really secure position, because I have a really nice mix as well of contracted work and completely freelance work, and that's the way I like it. I wouldn't like, me personally, I wouldn't like to be in a situation where all of my work is very ad hoc and freelance, and you don't really know.
Yeah.
Whether 1 month you're going to be working your weekends, your evenings and your days, because so much work has come in and you feel like you can't say no.
Yep.
And then the next month you end up with not much work, and, you know, you can't really plan. I would find that difficult. And in my setup, because I do virtual executive assistance and translation, my translation is very ad hoc and freelance.
Yep.
My virtual executive assistant is more contracted. So I have a really nice balance.
Okay, and for that contracted work, do you take on, for example, 2 clients at 10 hours a week each, or how does that work?
One client is an international private equity, and for them, they contract me for 3 hours per day. But because it's so busy and I'm flexible, I end up working, say, 5 hours for them every day.
Okay, yeah.
So that's an example of one client. And then I have language projects that pop up, whether it's football interviews. I really enjoy being involved in football interviews. I've enjoyed sports and football from such a young age. And you see lots of, you know, international football, especially now with women's football. There's lots of that popping up. And I take on projects as and when the pay is correct, because sometimes it's not. It's kind of forced down on the back of machine and automation, it seems.
Having that base or that contract base, that gives you
exactly
the freedom to pick the right jobs.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had that situation where you've been 2 or 3 weeks as a pure freelancer without any work for whatever reason, and then that job comes in, then you feel obliged to take it, but you're not in that position.
Yeah. I was in that position when I was traveling, and I did do that. And then after a while, I just thought, wow, the amount of hours it takes to do this work and compared to the amount of money I'm receiving, this is really not great. But I did it because it was my passion and I was new to the business. But now it's a no, unless they pay the correct rates for me.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. I really love your story, Lauren. I love how you've sort of brought everything together. I think that's fascinating as well, because sometimes I think we do different things at different points in our careers, and I think sometimes there's a tendency to think, oh, it's a bit of a mixture, and how does this all, you know, hold together? And I think often, especially because of the global demand for certain specialists or people with combinations. Yeah. A certain skill combination, I think, you know, you've shown how it all has come together. So, you know, your Interpol experience, the executive assistant, the translation, the languages, the travel, and it sounds like you've enjoyed your career all the way through, but it sounds like at this point you're really enjoying it in the sense that you're in control, it's something new, and you've figured out a way to manage the income levels that you want and have a certain degree of stability. And so I think it just sounds like the right combination for you. And as you said, it's not necessarily for everyone.
Exactly. And I think it's just following your passion as well. I always knew languages was my passion from a young age. And at times it's not been easy. There have been moments where it wasn't easy to know to find the good opportunities. And I ended up doing some jobs when I was, especially in my 20s, that I remember my parents saying to me at one point, they were like, but Lauren, you have a degree and you're not earning that much and you don't really like your job. And it was true. It can take a while to find the right opportunity. And I've really had to kind of work hard and carve that language career out for myself, because at times it's not that obvious at times, but you do get there in the end if you follow your passion, I think.
Yeah. Wonderful. Lauren, and one final question for you. What do you think the future holds for you in your business, or do you see yourself doing something else in the future, another stage? Where do you see the future taking you?
I think this is it now for me. I think it will be me and my business and languages. I will always stay with languages. I think it's going to be, this is my Mediterranean chapter, setting up home in Spain and enjoying this new chapter. I mean, we're starting off in Barcelona and then further down the line, maybe Valencia or Tarragona, buy somewhere there. That's going to be a really exciting chapter on a personal level. And I think my Spanish is really going to improve as well. For a while, my Spanish has been quite passive. And my French was very much the dominant language, just because I'd lived in France so much more than in Spain. I ended up working so much more with French companies or French directors. So my French became really fluent. And it kind of damaged a little bit my Spanish. My Spanish became quite passive. And now I think the next chapter is going to be real fluency in Spanish again. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with my French, whether I can have them both at the same fluent level or whether the Spanish will take over. And in terms of my work, my career, I think it's very much being my own boss now, continuing with my business. I can't see that changing, to be honest. And I think I will always be working with my languages. Hopefully I'll be even more involved with sports. And I hope as well that my virtual executive assistant work will become even more international, more involvement in lifestyle management, and have more of an international liaison element to it as well. So that's the next step, I think.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. It's been brilliant to listen to. I love the way that you've, you know, carved out that niche for yourself and brought your experiences together, and that you've also shown people, as you said, something that you wanted to do, shown people who are listening to this that there are a lot of opportunities out there for linguists, and it's not just limited to the two or three options that you were given earlier on in your career. So thank you for opening people's eyes to that, Lauren. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yeah, brilliant. All right. Well, thanks very much. I'll leave you with the last word. Please include your any contact details or web URLs for people to get in touch afterwards if they'd like to contact you directly. And yeah, just a big thank you from me.
No, thank you very much. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm always open to meeting fellow linguists and networking. And if anybody is in a similar line of work, whether that's translation, sports translation, or trilingual virtual executive assistants, or there's anyone based here in Spain, it would be great to hear from you. I'm on LinkedIn under Lauren Borden, B-O-R-D-O-N. And my email, if anyone wants to drop me an email, is lauren@yourtrilingualsupport.com.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Lauren. Great to talk to you. Thank you very much, Paul.
It's been lovely.
All the very best. All the very best on both a personal and professional level.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.